You're listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Katie Frankowitz, and I'll soon be joined by my co-hosts, KMUN news host and producer Skylar Butenshin and KMUN news volunteer Sylvia Thorpe. It's Wednesday, September 3rd.
A transportation funding package being pushed by Oregon Governor Tina Kotek is a step closer to passage after clearing the state house. Dirk Vanderhart reports.
Kotek's proposal passed the chamber with 36 yes votes, the bare minimum necessary for a tax increase. To reach that threshold Monday, Democrats needed some help. Cyrus Javidi, a maverick Republican from Tillamook, was the lone member of his party to vote for the bill. Javidi said he'd made the decision despite threats he'd be voted out of office next year.
I think the reward for doing the right thing here is worth the potential costs.
Kotek's proposal, House Bill 3991, is partly aimed at avoiding hundreds of layoffs at the Oregon Department of Transportation. It would also send millions to city and county road departments and public transit agencies. To do so, Kotek is proposing hiking the state's gas tax by 6 cents, increasing vehicle registration fees, temporarily doubling a state payroll tax, and slapping a new cost on EV drivers. The bill now moves to the Senate. I'm Dirk Vanderhart, reporting.
The cause of a fire at one of the tallest coastal Douglas fir trees in the world is still under investigation. The Dorner fir tree in Oregon's southern coast range is estimated to be 450 to 500 years old, with a diameter of 11.5 feet. Before a mysterious fire reported in its canopy in mid-August, it was 325 feet tall. A giant. Now, post-fire, it's closer to 280 feet. Still massive, and still standing, thanks in part to local and regional arborists and tall tree climbers. For them, it was an extremely unusual assignment.
Yeah, not only did it, there had to have been a set specific sequence of events, but the fact that the fire ended up in the world's tallest Douglas fir is just, the odds are astronomical, but unfortunately, it happened, and we were honored to be part of the solution, and thankfully, we ended up actually being part of the solution, and the tree will almost certainly, like I said, survive and most likely outlive both of us.
Luke Colvin, the owner and operator of ArborCare Tree Specialists based in Astoria, traveled to the Dorner Fir with his friends and fellow arborists Damien Carey and Logan Collier after earlier efforts to douse the fire with water from above failed. Fire hotspots were focused inside a cavity in the tree's trunk, 280 feet up, frustrating traditional wildland firefighting efforts. Carey and Collier ascended the tree and brought up a hose to flood the cavity with water. They also placed a sprinkler so that all of this work wouldn't need to be repeated if any hotspots flared up again. The Dorner Fir sits on land owned by the Federal Bureau of Land Management. A spokesman told KMUN the Dorner Fir is still one of the biggest coastal Doug firs out there. The area and the trail leading to the tree remain closed. Investigators have ruled out lightning strikes as a cause for the fire, but they say there is a possibility that the fire was human-caused.
The following stories come to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald. As the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is revising its State Wildlife Action Plan, officials have identified more than 320 species that need conservation efforts the most. The newest version would list nearly 30 more species in the greatest need category when compared to the plan from 2016. That indicates that a species has a small or shrinking population or is otherwise at risk. Oregon is fifth among states with the highest number of at-risk animals in the U.S., according to a 2023 report. More than half of Oregon's amphibian species, 10% of the state's bird species, and 20% of all reptile species are already in decline. Meanwhile, federal support for conservation is facing cuts. The Trump administration has proposed cutting U.S. Fish and Wildlife's 2026 budget by $170 million. Earlier this year, state lawmakers introduced a bill that would have increased Oregon's transient lodging tax from 1.5 to 2.5% to ensure regular funding for wildlife conservation programs. The bill passed the Oregon House, but it died upon adjournment before it could reach the Senate. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Fisheries Research Team is conducting a 10-week at-sea survey to better understand the population status of black, blue, and deacon rockfish. Those three rockfish species form the foundation of Oregon's nearshore recreational, charter, and commercial fisheries. The first survey of this kind was conducted in 2021. With the data it gathered, it helped avoid dramatic reductions in recent black rockfish quotas. Researchers have also developed a new, more accurate survey approach using scientific fish finders and underwater video cameras to count fish in nearshore waters. Earlier this year, the Oregon State Legislature approved a bill that included the Ocean Endorsement Fee to specifically fund future rockfish surveys in state waters. The North County Recreation District in Nehalem will be opening its new pool building in the coming weeks. Executive Director of the Recreation District, Justin Smith, recently said that training at the facility was nearly complete, and the district will plan a soft opening ahead of a later formal grand opening ceremony. The new facility features two pools, a six-lane lap pool, and a therapy pool featuring a wheelchair ramp for access. The project's $18 million budget is being financed by district savings, private donations, and an award from Tillamook County's Transient Lodging Tax Funds. These stories come to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
A state crisis hotline focused on Indigenous communities in Washington launched texting and online messaging services last week. The Native and Strong Lifeline has been operating since 2022. Its counselors strive to prevent suicide by providing Native people with culturally centered care. According to the State Health Department, Indigenous communities have the highest rates of suicide of any racial or ethnic group in the U.S. Mariah Thompson is with the Crisis Hotline. She says its counselors, who are all Native, are prepared to help with all kinds of problems.
It can range from suicidal ideation to just extreme anxiety and panic attacks to sexual abuse. Or we just have sometimes some amazing people that call in, some little old elders who want to just talk.
Now that the Lifeline can receive texts, she hopes more people will feel comfortable coming forward and typing out how they are feeling. To message an Indigenous counselor, text N8V to 988 or head online to 988lifeline.org. The Crisis Hotline is staffed year-round, 24 hours a day.
Shellfish experts with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife have finished their annual stock assessment, and now officials say razor clam digging along the coast will most likely begin with a set of minus tides in early October, as long as marine toxin levels are satisfactory. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife will issue its formal pre-season report and season announcement later this month. For all up-to-date information, you can go online at wdfw.wa.gov. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. Read more online at chinookobserver.com. For weather today in the lower Columbia River region, partly cloudy with highs near 70 on the coast and highs closer to 80 inland. And tonight, mostly cloudy with lows around 60.
You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you'll find today's local and regional news here at kmun.org/news. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.